Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Yes, sir. This is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. I'm your host, Nas Radio. And I'm joined by one of the most knowledgeable football fans in the country, as he would tell it, Mr. Craig Barton. How you doing, sir?
Nas, what's going on?
Not much, man. Just looking at these sports situations going on today and yesterday. We got a lot to talk about, man. First, I wanted to get into that Vikings game last night.
He did.
I mean, they blitzed him a lot, you know, tried to rough him up a little bit. But he seemed to respond to it. He got up, threw a lot of balls. He had a good deep ball to Percy Harvin, but he wasn't able to pull it in. But, you know, I had to throw that shot at Florida real quick. But, Favre did look pretty good, man.
Play within himself, man. I think if he does that, he'll fare far better off than if he tries to make too many plays. You see it on that team last night. They got a lot of playmakers, so all he needs to do is be a facilitator. If he does that, man, they'll be right where they need to be at the end of the season.
Just like the breakaway run by Peterson early, man. I mean, a dude that big running like that is ridiculous, man. And he ran away from everybody.
Yep. He got the hell on, man, as they say.
And what was up with your boy Favre's cut block, though, man?
Oh, man. I think this dude trying to make a play. Cat just happened to have his head turned as Brett Favre was going down. And, you know, kind of, you know, just tripped him up. And he was looking to trip him up, but Cat, he kind of rolled up on the cat's legs as soon as he turned around. His legs was ready into Brett Favre's body, and, you know,
yeah,
looks like he got injured.
Right, I mean, but at the same time, though, if you're cutting somebody and you're going low, you got to do it with some force so you're actually knocking the person in the air or knocking them off their feet. If you do it like you said, the way he do it where you're kind of in between, not really sure how hard you want to come, that's kind of how you end up, and that's how guys get knee injuries. Hopefully next time, man, he he does a little better than that.
You know how quarterbacks are, man. They're not looking for contact. I mean, it's very rarely you're going to see guys like Tebow looking cats up. You know what I mean? So, the quarterbacks, that's not, you know, especially in the NFL, you start looking folks up. As a quarterback, you're probably going to be sitting somewhere on the bench for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. Somebody's going to come for the get back. But, yeah, like you said, Favre looked pretty good. The Vikings, you know, they got a lot of talent on their team. What did you think of the Texans? Do they look like this team on the verge of the playoffs like people are trying to say, or do you think, you know, just another high-scoring team that just not going to be enough to get it done?
Texans are the Texans, man. I don't think they got enough playmakers. No, I think they got enough the defense looked like it's going to be pretty solid. You know, D'Amico Ryans was flying around there. You know, they got some good makers to be, you know, good defensive ball club. But I don't think they got enough pieces on offense to really.
Yeah.
Hang
there's
with
too
them.
Much reliance on Johnson.
Yeah, they, you know, they might have a chance to finish ahead of the Jaguars, man. We'll see.
This year, that ain't really saying much, though.
Yeah, pretty much. We don't have a lot of playmakers ourselves on offense, and defensively, there's hardly any pass rush. So, might be a long season. Might be back in that top 13 picks again after this year.
And what's going on with these new NFL coaches, man? We've seen the, you know, the Josh McDaniel story play out in Denver. He has a lot of side things going on, and now you got a coach of Kansas City. Haley, I believe it is, he fired Chan Gailey, the offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Who knows what the dealings are behind that, man? You know, it's no surprise to see Chan Gailey on the unemployment line. You know, he's been around, you know, college football, back and forth between the NFL. Who knows what could have been the base, maybe just philosophy, you know, philosophical differences.
But don't you get rid of, but if it's that bad or your ideas are that different, don't you do this during the summer? Why would you wait till the third preseason game?
I would think so, man, but, you know, it's maybe it was just kind of like a working deal with it where, the, you know, once the games were implemented, you know, you just didn't like the way, you know, Chan Gayle was making calls or the kind of plays he was running against certain schemes, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's better now to make a change than, you know, halfway through the season, you know.
Yeah, I believe that 100%. I believe if you're the head coach and your job is going to be on the line, you got to do what you got to do. So it's just surprising that he would do it right now. Just the timing of it is surprising. Did you see Rich Rodriguez's press conference?
Yeah, that's one of the more comical press conferences. I don't know what there was to get choked up about.
Did this grown man cry over accusations?
Yeah, it looked like it. I mean, that's what I was saying. I don't know what to get. Either you did it or you didn't, man. I mean, you get choked up when you get caught and you apologizing for something, you know what I mean? Just so you get choked up about, but I don't see any reason. So what? Somebody says, you know, you don't care about players, you just, you know, you're out there, you're cheating against NCAA rules. Man, they didn't even have a winning season, so what difference does it make? If they cheated, they cheated to suck. So, you know, it didn't do them, you know, going over the specified amount of hours that's allowed for practice didn't do them a damn bit of good. So,
right.
Well, I look at it, man, so what? If he did it, you know, it didn't benefit his team. And if he didn't do it, so the hell what? You got people accusing him of it? So what? If you didn't do it, you didn't do it, man. Just move on. Ain't nothing
right.
To get choked up about that, man.
Yeah, it's one of those NCAA rules that's just kind of a rule that's there, you know, to make it appear as if, you know, education is more important than athletics as far as student athletes are concerned. But no, reality, it's not something that's really enforced like that. I mean, there are ways of working around it. People have done it for years. And, you know, for those players to come out against them, those players must have really hated the guy is what it comes down to. Because, I mean,
let's be real. That cat is not for long for Michigan, man. That style of play doesn't work. I don't think he's going to get the players up in that kind of, you know, climate. Go play football the way.
Hey, if
you
don't get the players, that's on him, man. You're at the University of Michigan. I mean, it's not like you have your pipeline is only Ohio and Michigan. You have a big enough brand where you can pull players from everywhere. But
yeah,
I mean,
man,
you have to have a mouthpiece to do it.
You got some of these other schools where you can come on and boy, you know, back in the day, you know, you could get cats like, you know, like say for example, you know, you could get like athletes like Tommy Frazier. And, you know, you get them to a Nebraska. Now these days, man, you got some of these lesser programs that are on TV just as much, man. So, if I let's put it this way. If I'm a cat from Florida, right? No, he did get a cat from Florida. I believe that Tate Forcier kid.
Mm-hmm.
He got to come up there and play. But let's say if I'm a cat from Florida, man, and I got a chance to play for Central Florida or, you know, so in you know, in a climate that's better, pretty much better than Michigan, you know what I mean?
Right.
What the hell am I going up to Michigan play for, man?
Because
I get as much TV time in Central Florida or
No, sir.
I'm thinking South.
Michigan, you're talking ABC, talking big time. You'll be on. You'll get the chance to shine. You just have to, you know, he has to bring in the talent. And since he's running the spread, he doesn't have to bring in 5-star guys. I mean.
Yeah, but who are you gonna get to catch the ball, man? You gonna get Noel Devine at Michigan? I don't know.
Are you trying to imply that the Midwest there's no speed to be recruited? Is that what you're trying to?
I'm not trying to allege anything, man. I'm just saying look at what he's got so far. I mean,
he
didn't really have a great recruiting class this last go around. I mean,
he
was pulling cats in at West Virginia, you know. Lower academic standards. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, like every cat that, you know, that comes through to play football, they're going to be on the lower totem pole. But, you know, pretty much those best of the best, you know what I mean? The admission standards were pretty much lower at West Virginia than it is going to be at Michigan.
You trying to say that's why Pac-Man Jones got in, sir?
Hey, man, you heard that man speak. That says it all, my friend.
I just had to bring it up, man, just because I just want to introduce a small new little thing we're going to do. It's called Ignorant Word of the Week. And we're just going to go ahead back in the archives for Pac-Man and go ahead and give his I Wasn't Being Rebellion as the first word of the week. First ignorant word of the week goes to Pac-Man for his I Wasn't Being Rebellion. As he told Jim Rome on national TV.
Probably think there's nothing wrong with that, man.
To this day, yeah, he probably does. He probably thinks nothing wrong with that. And, since we're talking about college football, did you see Nick Saban got a bump in pay?
Yeah, you know, that's that whole SEC jockeying for highest paid coach type of deal, you know.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if LSU bumps up Les Miles now. Because,
right.
You know, Urban Meyer got his. So Alabama's like, hey, you know, we're going to up Saban's pay. And I think Les Miles got something in his contract that says he's got to be $10,000 more than the highest paid coach or something along that in his contract.
Mm.
So don't be surprised if you see Les Miles get some kind of deal to make him so much more paid than the highest paid coach in the SEC.
Yeah, it's funny how everybody who covers this is so compliant with it, just in the sense of that's just accepted, like it's okay. Like if you got a contract last year, if you have certain escalators or whatever in your contract to where it changes, it's okay. But NFL players are kind of, you know, put on the stake as soon as they try any type of contract renegotiation with years left still on the table.
I don't know what it is with that. Maybe it's because, you know, it's a race thing, man. I don't know. A lot of the coaches, I mean, yeah, they rework the deal. If a player is calling for more money, he outperforms his contract, it's considered greedy, man. I don't know. I don't know
why
that is. It's just a now, I'm a firm believer though, if you sign that contract, you probably should, try and play out that contract. If you want more money, you know, you negotiate it, but you don't sit out.
Right.
But I believe there's a perfect way. There's a way to handle everything. But in saying that, if a guy wants more money, if he's outplayed the deal and he's not, if he's playing like a top five receiver and getting paid within the top, you know, within the lower half, like T.O. was with the Eagles, you know, so a deal has to be worked out, you know. So something should be done to try and compensate that player for his play on the field.
Right. I agree. Contracts should be honored, but when you're talking about the NFL, it can't be that black and white. Like you said, the T.O. situation, you have to, you know, evaluate each one as it comes because, I mean, if I outperform the contract, I outperform the contract. If I underperform it, you're going to cut me. So, you know, there has to be some type of middle ground in this. So if I go to the owner and he doesn't want to make a deal, doesn't want to do anything, and my only power in this is to sit out, then I understand. Like Roddy White's situation this summer.
Yeah.
I understood why he had to do what he had to do.
You only got so many years, man, in the NFL. Anything can happen, man. You try to understand, you know, like I said, you got a deal, you sign, you shouldn't sit out. Like your boy in Phoenix is handling, man. Let your agent battle that out. Be displeased about it, man, be upset. But, you know, go out there and play, man. You know, sitting out kind of puts a negative light on the player. But sometimes I understand if that's what you got to do, then that's what you got to do, man.
Right.
At the end of the day, you gotta do what's best for you in the long run. So, NFL, you know, clubs, owners do it all the time. It should be no different for the players either.
Right. NBA and baseball, you know, my idea is totally different. Whatever you sign is whatever you sign, play it out. So guys like, what is your boy's name? Bonzi Wells, you know, who pouted about the end of their contract not being what they think it should be. No, I don't look at it like that. NBA contract, NBA, MLB contracts are guaranteed. You should play it out, and then whatever the market tells, that's what you get. Hell, John Conkak might not have deserved that money, but they signed him to it. So, hey, as far as I'm concerned, he should have been paid.
Like your boy Spider Sally always says, man, it's not what you're worth, it's what you negotiate. Negotiate, you sign that, hey, man, more power to you.
Right, right. And I was in a boxing conversation in a barbershop, and, you know, they were typical greatest of all time type of thing. And one of the things that really kept coming up was people kept bringing up people's record. Now, this, you know, this crosses all lines of sports, but, it, you know, it's a legit question. Does who you beat mean more than your record? So a guy like Larry Holmes, who was 49-0 at one time, when, you know, the heavyweight division at the time wasn't the best, you know, it was on the downswing, or a guy like Marciano, who was undefeated, and like I said, the same thing, heavyweight division wasn't the best. Does his career equal a guy like Ali or Sugar Ray Leonard or whoever, who went through a couple wars and had a rival who they fought multiple times? What means more to you? And I'm talking football, basketball, boxing, any sport.
Who you beat. Who you beat.
Who you beat.
How you and how you look doing it. You know, in boxing, I think it's important to see cats, you know, tested a little bit. You know what I mean? To see the greatness. Like, you know, to be pressed a little bit. And for you to, like, you know, overcome a little bit. If you that skill, you know, like the whole knock against Roy was, you know, hey, cats, you know, Roy just dominated cats. He was kind of playing with him, you know, quick. He was through this, and you know, sometimes he would kind of hold up the competition for the fight, because he was, you know, he was so skilled. And then people started to say, you know, he wasn't fighting anybody. Like this, yeah. And I mean, it is important. Like I said, it is important to for you to fight who you fight, and it's important in how you beat those guys too as well. Cause like you seen with Mayweather, you got to fight the best who's out there, man. And if you beat everybody who's in front of you, then you really give no one else anything to say.
Right. People have a lot of ammunition for Mayweather just based on who he hasn't fought. So, yeah. And you added another layer to that with what you said, how you look doing it. That definitely matters, too, because, like, if you judge the way Pacquiao beat Hatton, you know what I mean? That's a very significant moment. Even though I don't think much of Hatton as a fighter, the way Pacquiao took care of it leaves no room to doubt anything about the man.
No, it's kind of like I'll give you another analogy on that too. Like I say, you know, how you performed against them, and then sometimes those cats after you fought them, how those guys fight other fighters influence, you know, those guys who beat them as well. And saying it's just like football, when you play a team, like say for example, Alabama plays a team early in the year. And they beat them. But the next week, that team that took their loss, how they play against other competition influences how Alabama is perceived.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
So, right.
Like a cat like Ricky Hatton, you know, Ricky Hatton, he if he doesn't go on to fight or he fights again and he just continues to take L's, doesn't really make that Pacquiao win over him. Now, the way he knocked him out, it'll be just as impressive. But people will start to see Hatton as a washed up fighter by the time, you know, if he continues to fight and he continues to lose the way he he got lost, especially the lesser fighters. Then it diminishes that Pacquiao win a little bit.
Right. So it's like you start off with a big, like if you were a hunter, you start off with a big buck on the wall after the win. You know, you got the big head out down there in your basement. But if that fighter goes on and loses a lot of luster, that buck starts to turn into something else. You know what I mean? Hanging on your mantle. It's not the same. Not
correct.
The same shine that you got initially.
Correct. And it's even like that that fight with Roy Jones when Tarver beat him, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say, man, that was a shocking fight. Maybe Tarver's a better fighter, than he is, right?
Right.
And Roy Jones came out. There was a couple of fights lost to Glenn Coffey Johnson, which is getting knocked out, rag around. That
right.
really spoke volumes to maybe that Tarver got him when he was, a little bit on the downside, when he was going, coming on down the hill.
Nice.
And it didn't make that win, in retrospect, that much greater for Tarver, because you saw, I believe it was Vernon Forrest who dispatched him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you saw what, no, hold up. Was it Vernon Forrest who beat him?
A couple people have beat
Tarver. No,
it was Winky,
right? It was Winky, right?
There's been a couple. I believe Winky was one.
Yeah,
I want to say Forrest did too, but we have to check that later.
You see, Tarver wasn't as good a fighter as he was, man. The cat couldn't really keep himself in shape. He just, he caught Roy at a downside of his career. They say he beat him early in his career, like when they were
youngsters.
Yeah, when they were like, basically amateurs, but you saw that win. He really didn't make much noise after that. So, and those guys who beat Roy Jones, like those guys like Glenn Johnson, those guys were, not good fighters. So it kind of diminishes the win for Tarver in my eyes. So, because he got Roy when Roy wasn't quite Roy Jones. And some people will say he didn't fight anybody, so with that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's easy to say, but it's not true. He did spend a lot of time fighting fighters who were definitely not of championship quality, but, I mean, he did earn his stripes in some of the wins he had. I mean, he has two Hall of Famers, on his record, and that's Bernard Hopkins and James Toney, and not many people can say something like
James
that.
James Toney, hold it, back up on that. James Toney,
yeah,
a Hall of Famer?
Roy.
A Hall of Famer?
Yeah, James Toney definitely a Hall of Famer. James, I'm telling you, when it's all said and done, Tony's a Hall of Famer now. To do what he did, different weight classes, the way he did it, especially when you start to consider his lack of physical shape to be able to do what he did in the later years of his career. Most
that
definitely would be in there.
Out of Hall of Fame.
I'm telling you, man, his career record is about, I want to say 55 and about 5, something like that.
Michael Moore, Hall of Famer?
Hell no. Michael Moore's
okay, Buster Douglas got one win, right? That one thing, he all Famer?
No, no way.
What has James Toney done in his career that he's all
Famer? Multiple titles, different weight classes.
Oh, man, they got in fight.
All right, I'm gonna have my proof in a couple of years when he gets in. I'm telling you, Tony.
Everybody who was of significant stature in boxing that he fought, he pretty much took the L. And when he did win, he fought like a washed up Evander. I mean, come on, man. I ain't giving him no credit for that.
That goes right back to what we were talking about when he beat up Evander. At the time, everybody was amazed, but then, as we all seen, Evander was shot. It didn't mean as much.
Yep.
But, yeah, we can definitely get into Tony next time because I want to have the numbers in front of me and the real career highlights in front of me before I try to argue for the man. Another question I wanted to ask you about is historically black colleges. A lot of these schools are, financially troubled. And I wonder – Is there not an athletic director or coach who can go to one of these camps, be it ABCD camp or, you know, any five-star camp, and get four or five players and convince them that they need to come to their school, that they'll be the biggest thing since the Fab Five? How is no one not – how have they not done this yet?
Yes, man. First of all, you know what it's about? It's about getting on TV. It's about getting seen. HBCUs, man, where are they going to play on TV? Every two or three times, every 5 years, maybe on Fox Sports South.
Not if you bring in five top 50 players. You bring in five top 50, you're talking about the new Fab Five. They'd be the biggest, like I said, if they would have come here.
Yeah, but you're putting the cart before the horse.
You're the biggest thing out there. In Atlanta?
Yeah, but you got to say these players want to play on TV, man. They want to get the face seen. They want to be playing high-profile games.
They wouldn't be high-profile, but they would be the biggest story on the page. The new Fab Five, they're in Atlanta. They're in the city, and, you know, they would be living what's that terrible reality show that was on BET? College Hill. They'd be living the College Hill life. And, I mean, I think it's an easy sell. If you're a guy with a little bit of charisma, a little bit of Lane Kiffin in you, I think you could sell them on it, man.
I don't see it happening. I don't see it behooving any young kid to go play for an HBCU if you're a top 100 footballer.
Definitely not football. It has to be basketball because
that's a basketball.
You only need a couple players to make an impact. It can't be football. You would need two.
At HBCU, you could still probably sneak in there and get a few kids out of the top 100, but it's going to be in the lower 100.
But you have to broaden your horizon. You have to go for the top 50. You get five of the top 50 and create the new Fab Five. I know you remember how big the Fab Five were.
Absolutely, man.
They started this black sock, black shoes, Jews thing in basketball, the baggy shorts. They started it. They had a lot of influence, man. That M was a brand at the time.
And it all don't count. Took that all count.
Right. It don't count, but they sure as hell counted that money when it was coming in while they were there.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you that.
And they ain't giving any of it back either.
Most definite. Another part to the question from last week when we talked about the greatest talent brought down mostly by injury. I got another one for you, man. Greatest talent brought down by drugs. Now, I want to throw some names at you. Oh, you know he's on the list. I got Lynn Bias, Michael Ray Richardson, Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, John Daly, and Lawrence Taylor. You want to add anybody, or do you want to evaluate that list? What do you got?
That's a pretty good list, man. That's pretty much all. You even got golf in there, too.
Yeah, man.
Good list. I can't think of anybody else to add right off the top of my head.
Okay, so now that we're working with that particular set of players, who you got, man? Greatest talent brought down by drugs. Michael Ray Richardson, Lynn Bias, John Daly, Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, or Lawrence Taylor?
You almost got a good go with them two Mets boys, man. You almost got to go with them, man. It's. I don't even think it's close, man. The way Doc Gooden started out his career, they were talking about rewriting the record books, man.
Now, hold on, man. You gotta give me some perspective on this, because you know, especially back then when I was a younger dude, I had really no interest in baseball, so I gotta understand why you're saying Doc Gooden and Daryl were even bigger than LT, who had a Hall of Fame career despite what he was doing off the field.
That's the whole reason. LT still produced. He produced big, and the drugs almost didn't get in the way of him playing. You know, playing out his career. With the other two, it did. It hampered them. They missed games. They got suspended. Those were real addicts, man. Those guys were cocaine, abusing cocaine really got them, really derailed their careers, man. If you go back and look at it, how they started out, I remember a time growing up in the early 90s, man, when Daryl went to L.A. And he was missing for a few days.
Mm.
They said he would go on and on cocaine binges, man.
Gotta come find him, dress him up.
Yeah, man. And, you know, he was out of baseball and in jail because he couldn't get his life right with the addiction. Doc did the same thing, man. And those are guys who were destined when they came up in baseball. Now, obviously, I probably wasn't watching baseball then, but I've heard my brother talk about them, you know, early on and back in the mid '80s.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my brother said basically these guys were top elite prospects, man, that had all the talent, and they ended up pissing it all away on drugs, man. They said the 86 Mets used to do cocaine on their flights, man. Yeah, man. It was crazy, man. It was wild parties, man. Wild parties, and they got caught up in it, and they really got addicted. Dwight Gooden could have had a could have been Roger Clemens.
That's crazy.
He could have been as great as Roger Clemens, man. But once again, you know, that addiction derailed his career.
Hey, like the late great Rick James said, man. Cocaine's a hell of a drug. Oh yeah, another thing, man. All right, every time anybody has any type of elbow or arm issues, tendon, whatever it is, they bring in James Andrews, Dr. James Andrews. He's the, you know, top-notch expert as far as all that is concerned. Where is the hamstring expert, sir?
I don't believe there is one.
Is it because it's just not possible? There's no way of ever, or is just everybody's pretty much the same as far as thinking and what can be done about it?
There's only things you can do with a hamstring. Well, as far as what I know of the hamstring,
yeah.
As far as when you can strain it, pull it, or you can tear it. And pretty much when it's a strain, what do? You rest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a pulled hamstring, pretty much the same thing. Probably just going to be out a long time. But if you tear it, that's surgery, brother. Surgery. And I think there's a baseball player that's been out pretty much the whole year because of that. That's Jose Reyes, and they're talking about he's going to have surgery because of that torn hamstring.
And he's a guy that depends on speed, right?
Yeah. Well, pretty much they said there's certain ways you can strengthen the hamstring to lessen avoiding the injury, but
mm-hmm.
I believe when, you know, one of those three scenarios occur, it's only so much you can do.
Yeah. That's a bad deal, man. We got to get some kind of breakthrough on hamstring, man. I'm sick of players sitting out for a week or so because of it. I want all NFL teams damn near full strength. I want good games out there. Now, speaking of the NFL, I don't know if you signed up for any fantasy football this weekend, but I did. And in one of the leagues, it's from some friends back home in Illinois. There was an open spot, and one of our friends just told one of his guys at his job. So his guy gave the email so he could join. Now, I want to give you I hate to put the man business out here, man, but I'm not going to say the end of it. But I got to put this out there, man, because I still didn't believe it was real until I actually sent the email. This is a grown man, mind you. Works in corporate America because a friend works at a bank. The man's email address was pimpdaddyhustlestackmoney@suchandsuch.com. Grown man. We kids. That was his email address.
He may be still living the life, man. You never know.
Whatever life he's living, man, he need to get off it, man.
Hopefully
he's a grown man who works in the bank, man.
Hey, hopefully he's not putting that on a resume anyway. Hopefully that's his friend email, like, you know.
You shouldn't have told me that because I'm going to ask him now because I got to know. I got to know if that's his only email address or what. I don't know what the dude is doing. But if that is one of your email addresses, why would you give this to people who don't know you as like a representation of yourself?
That's a good question, man. That's keeping it real, man. Chappelle says, man, we're keeping it real goes wrong, man.
Yeah, he's keeping it real dumb. That's what he's doing right there. Now, let's get out of that. Leave that alone. The other day, you seen McNabb's little throat gesture over there about the experiment with Vic coming in running plays.
Yeah.
And what did you think of McNabb after that, man? Like,
but
did the ideas him change, or you had him pegged all along?
Nah, I knew McNabb was the kind of. I mean, I thought he was gonna be a kind of cat, man. But you knew, man. McNabb, this kind of cat, man. He ultra sensitive, man. I'll tell you this much: when he threw that pick, man, he gonna rhythm. What's that got to do with rhythm, man? Like I said, you know, rhythm.
Right,
you
threw in the double coverage. Rhythm, I can see if you're talking about an accuracy issue or
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Somebody offsides or
he threw. He got a ball picked off, man, and they started chanting Vic, man. I think that's where all that came from, man. I mean, he played better, but, you know, man, don't blame that on no rhythm, man. You just need to damn make better reads, man. That's all that is.
Right.
Call it like it is, man, and then you blame it on somebody else. So, like, you know, he disrupted Alvin, man. Come on, man. Somebody buying that.
To use Obama's words, he acted stupidly by throwing that pass in the double coverage. And like you said, those words hurt him. He heard him chanting Vic. He got a little sensitive about it and threw a little grown man tantrum. But yeah, I'm on the same level with you on that, man. I always thought the boy McNabb was kind of sensitive and a company type guy, except when it comes to himself. Then he's willing to speak up or you know whatever's needed when it's in his interest. But if it's somebody else, he'll toe the company line. So my respect for him is definitely a little different than most. And it kind of brings to light, like, when people throw out Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and, you know, I would try to form little arguments for McNabb to be included in that same class. But when you talk about mental toughness being a part of everything, man, he's just not on that tier, man.
I mean, the cat, he's a respectable dude, man, but sometimes, man, you got to stop acting like a little girl, man. He's his preseason dog. You know what I mean? What do you think they brought the cat there just to sit on the bench? They're going to try to use him, and what's the better time? Would you rather this happen during the season or during a preseason game? Shut up about rhythm. It's the preseason, man. They're working things out in the offense, man. Just stop being a little girl about certain stuff, McNabb. Just ride with it, man. It's preseason, man. Even if you had a dispute, you don't say that, and you don't act the way that you did. You don't act the way that you did on the sidelines, man. You know, if this was T.O., man, people would be up in arms, man. The thing they caved on him, McNabb, especially the fact that you came out and you say you all for this, you know what I mean? And then you come out. You know, after you didn't play as good in the first, you're going to say, it's later on in the ball game, it should be, well, you want to coach the team too, McNabb? I mean,
and it's
six plays.
It's not like you were turning over the keys to the offense to the man. Six plays. I'm telling you, man, you send him out to Indianapolis doing the same thing, and Peyton Manning is excited about ways they can use him. And what it's going to mean for him when he's in, as far as, okay, they're going to have to adjust to that. Now I'm going to be able to do this. While McNabb looks at it as, oh, well, he's messing up my rhythm, or he's changing this, they're changing that.
That's like I said, man. Even if you think that, man, you don't give the media that kind of nonsense, man.
Right.
You creating your own drama, man. You creating a circus atmosphere by trying to do it because they're gonna feed into it. So number one, take that to your coaches, man, in the coach's office. Talk about that. Keep in mind, man, this is preseason, man.
And I can't blame the media because that's such a good story. You can't ignore that if you're somebody who works in the media. You can't ignore that. That's fresh meat right there. You got to jump on it.
Look like he gave Vic the back with that. You know, he was doing that throw justice, eh? You know? gave Vic his back. Talking to coaches, and he was giving the throw justice, like cut it off. Oh, man, McNabb, never liked the cat. Never liked him from day one.
Well, hopefully, man, dude will get his head on straight and realize what's important and, you know, what he's in control of.
You need to stop being a girl, man. Stop acting like a chick. Chick was PMSing, man.
That, like your boy, what you say, your boy Carlo Rogers said? Air Day.
Blue Air Day.
All right, let's talk BCS for a minute, man. Is the BCS legit to you, or do we need a little more reform? I'm not talking playoffs. Just do we need to tweak it a little bit just on the strength that we never got to see USC versus Florida?
Need a plus one.
Plus one?
Yeah.
If there was a plus one present, we'd have seen USC Florida twice already, probably.
You believe so?
I definitely believe so, man. I mean, I want to see the best talent go at it head to head and see who comes out, man. I think we'd have seen it twice already.
I think last year would have been a hell of a good time to see it. I think they were definitely the two best clubs, you know. I wouldn't buy in that whole Oklahoma thing, even though Oklahoma played pretty decent, man. But I still believe the two best teams at the end of the year, even before Florida beat Oklahoma, was Florida and USC. Even though USC played down to the competition, man, because it really didn't make any sense for them to get beat by Oregon State. Man.
And then the fact that, okay, if Oregon State wins out, they play in the Rose Bowl, and USC probably gets in the championship game. A one-loss USC, one-loss Oklahoma, with Oklahoma's track record in bowl games, they probably throw USC in there for the Sanchez first T-Bowl big show. So, I mean, when things are that tight to where somebody else is affecting the championship game, I do want to see a plus one. But I'm with the local columnist here, Terrence Moore, on a straight playoff. I'm with him. I'm against the straight playoff because, like you say, it's a playoff every week. Every game is big.
Every game is big, but you got to think about it. Not everybody's schedule is the same. And plus, everybody's conference ain't really the same. So, I mean, yeah, every game is big, but let's say, you know, like, for example, how do you stack up Utah, man? A team that runs the table but then beats Alabama at the end of the season. You don't really know how good they are because of the competition in their conference. And then at the end of the year, you look up and they beat Alabama in a bowl game, and then you're saying, man, what if? What would this team look like against, you know, some of the elite? Are they good enough? You know, it's a guessing game. You really don't know. And the way they beat Alabama, you know, a lot of people say, you know, hey, man, they just kind of ambushed Alabama. But, man, they made them look terrible, man.
They did, but
undefeated
club. I would throw this in. I would say for the teams like Utah and whatnot, that the preseason ranking is what hurts them so bad because it's so hard to climb up, you know, that hill. Now, if they start off with no rankings the first week and then the next week add the rankings, then you're talking about changing something because people have a much better shot at moving up if they deserve it.
Still,
so, I mean, everybody knows who's on the radar. So, I mean, having those rankings that first week really does nothing but slow up teams who are from a smaller conference or who get better as the season rolls along.
Still, it's gonna be very hard for a team who playing in the WAC or one of those conferences, like one of those lesser conferences, to really prove themselves, man, that they can face the elite, because they're never going to be given that kind of opportunity. They're never going to be able to advance all the way up to the polls in order to play a championship game. People are always going to look at them as being a lesser conference, playing lesser competition. So.
Right, that's true, but I'm saying this way, at least you would get a better shot as opposed to what you got now. I mean, now, hell, you gotta have a rash of injuries throughout the country or something for, you know, a bunch of teams to fall by the wayside so you can move up, or just a gang of upsets. So, I don't know. I think it's something that'll help. Like I said, it's definitely not a straight-up solution to it, but, hey, if we tweak it here and there, man, who knows? 2020, we might have a good system in place, man.
Yeah, I think a plus one would help for now, but they definitely need to work a playoff, man. They need to kind of get everybody in conferences. They need to get every conference playing a championship game. And then you could kind of filter it out, you know, like especially the big conferences like the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
I say you could basically, I think you could work it out. It'd be something along the lines of where, you know, those big conferences like ACC, SEC, and you have two divisions. You play your division rivals and maybe two out-of-conference opponents. The champions of those two divisions play each other in the championship game, and then the championship, the conference championship winner would go on into some kind of playoff scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Still have your bowl games for the teams that are not playing in the BCS championship playoff game. In the BCS championship playoffs. It should kind of be like you kind of pare down your schedule to like maybe depending on, you know, how many teams are in those conferences, those two different conferences, those two different you know, like SEC has the East and the West, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you play, if let's say there's like six or seven teams in those different divisions, right? You would play all six of those opponents in your division, right? And, you know, currently how it is, some years you could play someone from the East, you know, you could play one or two teams from the East and then not play them again the next year. I say you play all the teams in your division. Based on that record, you know, like the East or the West, that would determine who plays in the SEC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the SEC championship game, the winner of that conference championship would then go into a BCS format.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's interesting right there. Okay.
I mean, it's definitely
easier than, you know, most suggestions that are out there, man.
If you play, like I'm saying, you lessen the amount of games. If you think about it, you know, especially like the ACC, how the ACC is separated. If you play strictly all the opponents just on that one side of the division that you're in, right? And maybe you have two out of conference games. We may be talking to where anywhere maybe about eight games that are played. That's your season, right? And then based on your standing within the division, you determine whether or not you're going to play for the championship against the, you know, the opposing side. But you need every single college football team to be in a conference in one of these what they call power conferences, right?
Right.
You need them to be, you know, to be established like the SEC, like the ACC. You need the Big Ten to add more, at least two more.
Mm.
I think the Big Ten is actually the Big 11, so they have to add one more. And like the Big 12, you would need them to play. They already play a championship game, so they're good. But the way it is, I think if you structure it that way, it kind of makes sense. Well, you can fit a, because you would probably still be able to play up to 13-14 games, which some teams already do right now, and then they'll clearly define a winner. That way, you would only have what are we talking about? Maybe eight power conferences,
And people have no gripe because you had the chance on the field.
Correct. And then you could still have those teams who didn't win their conference championship play lesser bowl games that people can watch if people are worried about, you know, hey, what's going to happen in the road. Or you can incorporate those games like the Rose Bowls, like those BC, the prime BCS, what is it, Tostitas,
mm-hmm.
Rose, Orange, and the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
Still incorporate those into your BCS playoff format.
Yeah, that sounds good, man. Sounds good right there. Hopefully somebody will start trying to make a move, man, so we can get a legit champion every year and we can get the best game every year. I would love to see that. Well, I guess we're going to have to get out of here in a minute or two, man. But before we go, man, I just want to throw this out there. Is Manu Ginobili's Eurostep traveling?
Nah.
You say no?
Nah.
I say half the time it's traveling, man. So I can see why you would say no. It's two steps most of the time. Looks clean a lot. Sometimes, man, I don't know.
I don't believe it is, man. Like, yeah, every time I see that cat, man, he looks like he's a long strider, man. Looks like it's two steps to me.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Sometimes he seems to change direction with it, step around people and whatever else with it. But either way, man, this is Speaking Like You're Thinking Radio. I'm your host, Nas Radio, along with Mr. Craig Barzy. Good show, sir, and we'll see y'all next week. Check us on iTunes.